Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Welcome to the Delicious Podcast Extra Portion with me, Julie Smith. This week, the last week of 2017, Jamie Oliver reflects on his food fights, both on screen and off, of the last two decades, talking openly about his opinions and visions and what it could take to change areas of the food industry to make it fairer for all. And perhaps, as you might expect, there's a little bit of mild swearing. I started by asking him what he thought he'd achieved through Channel 4's Friday Night Feasts over the last year.
First of all, I think just talking about the subject of food, celebration of food, the interest of food, the politics of food, you can look at, you know, food through so many different lenses. And actually, Friday night has always been a troubled night on TV. So it's really, it's a struggling spot. And for whatever reason, we're in our seventh season of Friday Night Feasts, which is essentially trying to get the country excited about the concept of tomorrow ain't like a working day for most of us. It is markets. It is like a different vibe. You have got more time. And whether you're going to a pub or a butcher's or if you're, you know, going shopping, you know, have a look for some different things. You know, most of us do cook differently at the weekend. So this then becomes, in our seventh season, this amazing opportunity to not just make you laugh and joke and have joyful stories around food. Also, we want to kind of get your, you know, your radar up. We want to get your ears pricking up. We want you to be bothered about stuff we're bothered about. And I think that's then when we have like 12 minutes in the show, in the hour, to try and inform the great British public, actually the global public, you know, this goes to 80 countries around the world, about stuff that maybe we didn't know happens in our food system. And when you scratch a little bit deeper, often you find things that really bother you, that are wrong, that are misguided or disingenuous, and we want you to know about it.
Now, what's interesting with you is you are very into your feedback. You measure your impact. You know, you really know who you're talking to and how you get those messages out there, because a lot of the stuff that you do is active campaigns with the Food Foundation and all the stuff that you do. You know, your revolution is sort of written in your blood, isn't it? And so when you're talking to those Friday night feasters, what kind of feedback do you get to know that those people are really paying attention?
If I'm really honest, it's often about timing. You know, like I've done a couple of really important food fights that were just too early. Like, so Holiday Hunger, for instance, you know, which is a narrative about when you put a kind of lens onto the poorest of our communities, which are often on the dole and on benefits. Those kids will always get a free lunch or breakfast, and they're protected by the state 190 days of the year throughout the whole of their schooling. But then when they go on school holidays, most of the country's like, yay! And the joys of food and being on holiday. But for those parents, it's like, oh my Lord, what am I going to do with the same budget? But then I've got no lunch and breakfast covered. So although I believe in the depths of my bones that if you're bothered about numbers of unemployment, then actually we should care about holiday hunger, because A, kids are getting hungry, therefore they're largely given rubbish, so those kids are getting fatter quicker, and those parents don't go back to work because they're worried for their kids. But from the slightly, I won't mention the newspaper, but that kind of part of Britain that is very close to many of us, they're seen as ponces and takers, and they're on benefits. So we were early with that story, and it didn't resonate the way it should have. But I know that we've got to come back to it maybe in 3 years' time, and there'll be a moment in the time. So we don't always get it right, but it's still the right thing to do.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes, like, you're creating the ripple to surf on the ripple later on. So I think what's interesting about campaigning and change and empowering the public to vote with their pound and when they're shopping and realise how important that choice of where you spend a pound, and just, you know, you could fix probably all of the problems in the dairy farming industry for about 8 to 10 pence, but we don't all choose to do it because everyone's, you know, so but actually if you did a vote, everyone would probably go, fair enough.
Yeah.
But, you know, but it's, I suppose maybe from the outside, generally from journalists, like, did you win, did you fail?
Yeah.
Did you, didn't you?
Yeah.
But actually, in the campaigning spirit and the idea about changing people's perceptions or methods of farming, it's a long game.
But actually, you know, if we look back over the last 20 years of your career, you know, let's say that a lot of people didn't really even bother to cook. There were a lot of blokes who didn't cook. A lot of people didn't do that thing, that social thing that you did with the Naked Chef, where, you know, have some people around to cook. It doesn't have to be amazing, you know, it's bish, bosh, bosh and all that kind of stuff. You know, it was easy. And you brought a lot of people into cooking, which then grew a whole generation of people who love going to markets on Saturdays.
Mm.
So there's in that time, we have a new food culture. Now, yes. I'm not laying that at your door completely, but you were pretty much, you know, part of that whole movement to get people interested.
We wanted to get men cooking. Wanted to get men cooking, and 20 years ago, in numbers, they weren't.
Yeah.
And that also was paralleling women going to work.
Yeah.
So you get a couple both going in and putting a 12-hour day in, getting back, and around the whole country, all these men will be going, quite old-fashionedly, what's for dinner, love? Yeah. So, of course, as we both know, it ain't just about the food, it ain't just about the cooking, it's interconnected with so many other things. And in that respect, it was also about, you know, equal opportunities for men and women, women going to work in large numbers, how the socially the household and therefore the high street changes because of that.
Yeah. But also sitting around the table, you know, talking to each other and having that kind of social interaction, bringing kids up, understanding that that's what food is, which, of course, has been happening forever in most countries in the world. And we just kind of dropped off for historical reasons. And we don't need to go into that. But what's interesting about that is that you also went across classes in that. So it was a lot of working class people who wouldn't have necessarily started shopping in Sainsbury's, started shopping for prawns and things like that.
Sure.
And it really opened it out for them. So when you're coming to your food fights and you're talking about ducks and veal, does that mean that you can talk directly to a wider group of people? Can you talk across class to those people and you know, go for the animal welfare?
Yes and no. I mean, I think, like, a lot of, if I look back over 20 years and look what I did by chance or luck in the early days, and then what I've done through intention maybe in the last 13 years, and then in the last 3 years being much more rigorous about and ninja and structured, and we've got kind of, you know, campaigning departments, and we people that specialise in government writing and communications and all sorts of stuff here. I think you have to be, I mean, I don't know if it's my dyslexia or whatever, but, like, you have to be, you have to have the capacity to be very, very nuanced about the minutiae, but also go ultra galactic and look at it. And you know, one of the problems that I have is certainly, look, and I can only look you in the eyes and say this is the truth, but the reason I get up and work, or I've planned to for the next 12 years, is because primarily it's the gap between advantage and disadvantage in society. So what does that mean? It means that if you're a poor kid in Britain today, it's tough. So our sites actually are primarily about getting more good real food to the poorest communities. Ironically, if you did a poll, they don't like me that much.
Why?
So, well, because I'm seen as a kind of middle class. They even say things like it goes to private school and stuff like that. I think there's a few weird things that I have to cope with in my daily job. One is, if you care about food, that's posh. But of course, if me and you have that conversation in Spain, Portugal, France, they go, what?
Yeah, yeah, cool.
What?
Yeah.
You know, I'm sure that it's the same for you, because I know you're a foodie, but like, as I've travelled around the world eating the best food in my life, the best, most powerful moments have always been from people that haven't got much money.
Yeah.
So, you know, so then the luxury of life definitely becomes a story about knowledge.
Yeah.
We could call it education, but knowledge, or the passing down of the craft of cooking,
yeah.
Which is, you know, essential. But then access. And I think when you're talking about the most disadvantaged communities, often, even within cities, even within this country, it's stories about lack of access to fresh food, real food,
yeah.
and lack of knowledge.
Yeah.
So really the Jamie Oliver business now, and even me as a person, is like an onion, like a cut through an onion. It depends which button you want to press. Like, absolutely most people know me for jazz hands, having a laugh, going on a voyage, an adventure, and I'll happily do that, and I'm really comfortable doing that, and it's joyful, and that's me as a mainstreamer. That is quick and easy five ingredient food. That is that concept of that book, and why was it done like that in that way. But behind the scenes, it's like a duck underwater. Like, there's these little legs paddling away, and it is about, oh God, I mean, I've never really tried to explain this, kind of like change management, and I just made that up. But it's often very hard for intelligent people to understand what the blimmin' hell I'm talking about. But if I can look back over 15 years and follow, often people politicize food and farming, hunger, all of these issues, economics, so it's money or politics, and actually these can be driven and changed for the better or worse with government or ministers or CEOs of businesses. But really the bit I work best in is the tone of the public, the conversations the public are having around coffee machines and desks. So the reason that McDonald's UK is quite an interesting, quite, to be honest, and you might be shocked me saying this, it's quite an extraordinary business now.
Well, I interviewed the CEO of McDonald's at your cook-off.
Yeah.
And he was incredible.
Paul Pomeroy is the CEO now. I started talking to McDonald's, Steve Eastbrook, maybe 12 years ago. I've never worked for them or taken a penny from them, just to be clear.
Mm-hmm.
But that business is now propped up by 100% organic milk, free-range eggs, the beef's in good nick, the pork is even RSPCA Freedom Food Standard. If you compare that to the American business, the only difference is what the locals want. The British public expect more. And often the British public at large don't feel part of that, but they are part of that.
Mm.
And it does come down to where they spend their pound when they go shopping every week. But that's the bit that I do, which is always 10 steps removed from the action.
It is. Now, I'll tell you, behind the scenes at that cook-off, that CEO cook-off that you did at Billingsgate, and we did the piece on Delicious Podcast about that. Peter Harding from LucasAid said he wanted to be on your side,
yeah,
because that's the cool thing to do. And he said what was really interesting about that was you had persuaded him. He saw an opportunity to change the recipes at LucasAid to reduce, I think, something like 50%, 40% in sugar, new recipes. And he said that the lovely thing about that was that the people who work at LucasAid know that they're Jamie's guys. And that's a cool thing.
Yeah.
So they become the foot soldiers. But it is because of your influence. And Paul said the same thing about McDonald's. Now, that's fabulous. But why do people feel that way about you and not other people?
Well, look, I'm an interesting character, but I ain't that bright. I've never done anything that clever. I've never come up with a concept that I'm proud of, that I've achieved, that my 12-year-old child couldn't have come up with, right? So, you know, as much as I've been involved in some incredible things, we're really fighting a lot, and we're putting a lot into making some very basic decisions. We're not even talking about cutting edge. We're not even talking about things that will really sculpt us to 2050 with a population rising by billions and water displacement becoming a problem and antibiotic resistance and obesity getting even worse. We ain't even on that conversation. We're dealing with the last 20 years shite. So I love it. If I'm really honest with you, it's a huge, huge burden, if I'm really honest.
Because you couldn't live without it, could you?
I'd love to.
Really?
But I haven't got a choice. It's not about me being a nice person or this, that, and the other. It's about when I think if you're a half decent average person who happens to have a platform, which I have an unusual platform, that when you're shown things, when you've been there, when you've seen it, you're changed.
Yeah, but a lot of people do that. I mean, you know, you've got NGOs all around the world doing that, and they come back and they're all communicators in different ways. And you tell stories that actually land in the laps of people, and they change their consumption patterns as a result.
What? I definitely approach things differently from a time perspective, but also, you know, I really try and get 3D and surround sound about, like, what is it? Often I meet amazing, brilliant people who are just too clever to fix the problem. Mm. They're just too bright. And they're focused on the detail, and we do need that detail. So I think this is kind of trying to, like, dot to dot the dot to dotted finish game. And I think, so what does that mean? What on earth am I talking about? I think when you're looking at population health going down and the cost of that going up, and then the rise of obesity directly linked with type 2 diabetes, and then directly related to Alzheimer's, and then an aging population, mm-hmm. and the cost of that, it's a complex story to tell, but really it becomes about a story about environment, which is then about honesty and truth. It's about, why haven't we got legislation around labelling? Why isn't it legislation for it to be colour-coded? Why are these really obvious things not fixed? And it's because we're all daft. We're daft. And also, CEOs and ministers only average about 4 years in term, which is way too short to make good decisions for children.
But then you make something like Sugar Rush, as the last big documentary that you made, yeah. Was it? And it had a huge impact, and I was looking on Twitter, all over the world, particularly in Australia and here where it had just been shown. The response was phenomenal, and it was because you were responding as just a normal human being. And there's something about, authenticity. It's the thing that we love, and it is about not overthinking. It's about gut.
You've got to humanise this stuff, and I think ultimately... I just want you to picture this for a second. When I sit down in front of my organ... So all these people you see around you now... When I gather them together for a town hall meeting and go, right, guys, I'm their leader, right? They work for me. I pay their bills on time every month, right? Guys, I've got this great idea. We're going to spend a year and a half dedicated to creating a new tax in Britain.
They go,
what, and you think, what? Because we all love tax. So I think these concepts are not... But I have to sell them in internally first.
Yeah.
And I have to ratify my romantic view with science, and then the only reason we actually won the sugary drinks tax, because Cameron didn't want it, mm-hmm. and we were part of the construction of the childhood obesity plan before it got torn to pieces by Mrs. May and her cronies. The only thing that actually was any legislation in her plan, the only thing left, was the sugary drinks tax,
right.
Which by far and large was the hardest thing to get through, and we got it through. And the only reason we got it through was because the romantic side of me and the righteous side of me, and the one trying to treat other people's kids like my own, was backed up most importantly by economic modelling, science, and the longest list I've ever seen of heads of NGOs and departments of health.
Yeah.
I mean, if you were entrusted with any responsibility and that was put in front of you, you'd go, oh, okay. But what's interesting is, like, and again, just with, like, the concept of, like, okay, so as someone listening to this podcast now, are you going to judge the concept of a sugary drinks tax? Even though it's righteous and we've gone through all that and we've got it, it was never about that.
Mm.
It was never about lowering consumption of the drinks.
Mm.
It was never about increasing more milk and water sales, which it will do. It was never about even the tax revenueing up to £1 billion of new money into school food system for sports and breakfast clubs. Right? I love all that, and I admit all that, but it was never about that. It was about a moment in time when the government, that historically have had no balls, have stood up, identified an area of environmental change where these little businesses have gone from little to prolific and sponsor our Olympics and all this sort of stuff, acknowledge that it's a problem, put them on the naughty step, and what it was really about was to fuel the reformulation of the whole industry,
yeah.
which is now happening.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why United Healthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Yeah.
So and everyone's
really is,
reformulating.
So everybody's on board now. And actually, there's a point, you know, in 5 years' time, you might say that it's going to be really hard to get hold of some of these sugary drinks.
I think, first of all, with the exception of things like hydrogenated fats, which cause cancer, you know, which categorically are negative, generally speaking, I don't want to take anything away from anyone. You know, although people might think that I'm a kind of on-off, healthy or unhealthy, I think the naughty things in life are there to be savoured and enjoyed, and that's part of a healthy, balanced life. In my opinion, I think psychologically, I think there's enough room in the week to have some indulgence, for sure. For me, it was, in a way, like a piece of chocolate or a cake has been the honest naughtiness ever. It's never lied to you. It's never said it was healthy. Where things get complicated is in the area of things like cereals, which we did in the food fights this year.
Yeah, and Kellogg's announced last week 50% reduction in sugar.
Yep. And that's all part of the sugary drinks tax noise.
Yep.
And Hugh's been very active in this area as well. Nestle have just made a bunch of commitments around colour-coded nutritionals, which is, of course, not legislation, it's optional. But and I think Friday Night Feast and the documentaries that I do are about the conversation, and I think we've largely had success. So, and I don't take that for granted at all. I mean, I think it's in a way it's sort of now because we pulled. I mean, especially because we pulled off the sugary drinks tax,
yeah,
that I think in everyone's mind was a surprise. Now the next conversation is like, what next? Oh my God, it's Oliver again. So my responsibility is I've got to treat this with real respect as well. I mean, it's I wouldn't say it's easy. I think when you give the public good, clear information, they often make great choices. I think the public at large are good people. I saw it most vigorously when I did Foul Dinners, which was an interesting show. I did it about, I don't know, like 10 or 8 years ago. But we did a show where we invited a bunch of people in the industry and campaigners and this, that and the other, members of the public, to a gourmet dinner with Jamie Oliver. They got in, it was black tie, and then I clicked my fingers and the walls came down and we were in a chicken farm. And basically, I wasn't pushing any standard. I didn't feel it was my position to preach. But it was the story of the same chickens, or eggs, hatching, and those chicks going off into intensive, free-range organic systems, and what happens. It went out on a Friday night. It got 4.7 million viewers. So sometimes the simplicity can work.
Yeah.
You just got to find the sort of way to tell those stories.
Yeah.
We got out of, you know, Britain got out of caged battery eggs way before Europe. So You know, it's amazing how certain things have a very visceral, immediate change to all elements of the public. Happy Christmas, everyone.
Thanks for listening to the Delicious Podcast Extra Portion. We're back next week with more from Jamie on what he's planning to fight for next year. Plus, Dawn French on her role as a chef in Sky One's drama series, brilliantly titled Delicious. And more from our usual menu of producers, food stars, and the Delicious Magazine Test Kitchen. Make sure you subscribe via iTunes or your podcast app. And have a very Merry Christmas.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.